Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Spark Show DFS podcast. I'm your host, Sparky Lee. What a Masters. Holy shit. That was the best Masters of my lifetime and probably, arguably, the best Masters ever. Just that leaderboard going into the weekend was insane. The finish was insane. I thought, right when we got to like hole 10, 11, I thought Molinari was, he hasn't made a bogey since freaking Hasselhoff knocked down the Berlin Wall. So I thought Molinari's just going to coast to a 3-4 stroke lead, something stupid. I'm going to be real boring from there and disappoint. But right when he went in the drink on 12 after Koepka and Poulter did it, I started celebrating. I was like, this is going to be awesome because now everybody was in the hunt. Right after he did that, they cut to Cantlay on, I think it was 15. He had that eagle putt, knocked it in. He had the outright lead. So then from there, it was like every 2 minutes we were watching somebody putt for a share of the lead or for the outright lead. So it was absolutely incredible. And then even DJ and Brooks had putts on 18 that would have pushed it to a playoff. But obviously, Tiger probably would have played the 18th different if he knew bogey wasn't going to win. But to watch Tiger grind past all of these just superstars and come up with this Masters win after so many years was incredible. And I didn't have any money on him to win. And I do that sometimes because I feel like he's overvalued, because people are, no matter if it's 10-1 and he doesn't have a snowball's chance in hell to win it, people are still going to bet him. So his number's always inflated a little bit, so the value is never really there. So I don't pick him all that much. But when he wins or he does well, you know, I can celebrate it too. And I don't need money on him because that's just something awesome to see. I grew up playing his video games and he's a big reason why a lot of people are into golf right now. So that's pretty awesome to see him with a comeback. But after Molinari put that second one in the drink on 15, and then he was tearing up on 16, I kind of felt bad that I was rooting against him so hard, because he's the guy that, like, he's been working really hard, and he should get a green jacket, and he probably will at some point in his career. So that was kind of tough to see him crumble. But one of the biggest meltdowns in the back nine on Masters history is going to go down, like, pretty much unnoticed, just because Tiger came back and won, and that's the new storyline. So Molinari kind of lucked out with that. But that's pretty much all we need from the Masters recap this week. I think pretty much everybody watched that, and they don't need me to tell them what happened. So now we're going to get into the RBC Heritage and go over some of those details. First off, the course. Harbortown Golf Links in Hilton Head Island, South Carolina. It is a par 71. 7,099 yards. It is a Pete Dye design, so it's kind of that classic Pete Dye feel with a little bit of help from Jack Nicklaus in this one. The biggest thing you will need to know going into it, it is the smallest greens on tour. I do this sometimes where I'll play the course on some Tiger Woods video game that I have. In this one, it was on Tiger Woods 2005 on the GameCube, so that was pretty wicked to go back and play that. But I play it just to get the feel for it, and I shot with Adam Scott, and I wanted to keep the drives realistic between, you know, 285 and 305. But even then, there was some tight layup spots in the fairway where some of these guys are probably not going to go driver, and they're gonna lay it a little bit short just so they have a wider shot into the fairway, a better angle. But I shot a 53. I forgot how easy putting was on that game. I was 10 straight holes is what I finished on of birdie or better. So I was probably set a course record there. But it's a tree lined course, and it's somewhat like Augusta in the way that the trees are lined up, but they do block the holes a little bit more. So whereas Augusta, you're out on the pine straw, you can still punch it through these windows and get to the greens, or punch it through and get to a good spot. Sometimes you're just screwed when you end up in the trees here. So you do have to, if you miss, you got to miss in the right spots. Accuracy over distance here, it is much shorter than you would see at Augusta. But Bermuda greens again, Bermuda grass all around. There's some water in play, especially on the par threes. There's two par threes, I think, where you got to pretty much carry water the whole way, right about 190, 200 yards. So those are going to get pretty dicey. There's a decent amount of bunkers, and there's a few holes where there is huge bunkers, or there are just some nasty bunkers protecting the greens. So some sand plays, you know, some scramblers are going to be nice here. The wind can get bad, and it looks like it's going to get bad this week, and it's, I think it's still somewhat early looking at it, but Friday it looks like it's going to get real bad. There's no real AM, PM wave you can stack because it's just going to be windy the entire day. So maybe just look towards guys that can play well in those conditions. That's probably your best bet, because I'm not sure you can really stack one side or the other. That's pretty much it for the course. The key stats that I'm looking at, strokes gained, tee to green, with a big emphasis on strokes gained around the green, because these are the small screens on tour, like I said, and it is close to 50% of these greens get missed in regulation. So you're, a lot of the times, a bigger percentage you're going to be playing from just off the greens, you know, fringe area, or, you know, 10, 15 yards off, and you're going to have to really work your chip game. So that was something I saw that correlated really high to how you place in this tournament from years in the past, was strokes gained around the green. And then in line with that, and, you know, the bunkers that do get pretty dicey here, scrambling is going to be another big one I look at. And par 4 scoring, it is a par 71, so there's 3 par 5s, 4 par 4s, and 11 par 4s and 3. Jeez, I just messed that up. Let's roll back one sec. 3 par 5s, 11 par 4s, 4 par 3s. So there's an extra par 4 here compared to what there was last week at Augusta. So just that one par 4 extra that you play each round is going to make a difference. So par 4 scoring is weighted a little bit higher this week. Some other kind of stats that aren't as important but also nice to look at that I kind of factored in was proximity. Because the greens are so small, it kind of helps if you can really sharpen in with those irons and you know, put it somewhat close. But some of these greens are like shaped like S's and just weird shapes. So even when they're small, they're made even smaller because of how skinny they are in certain spots. So proximity is really going to be key to have these guys dial in and, you know, put it somewhat close to the pins. Driving accuracy is another one, because you're going to have some, there's a couple holes where there's like trees that guard the green. So if you're on the wrong side of the fairway, you're not even going to have a look at this green. So driving accuracy is another one you want to think of. Par 5 scoring, there's 2 par 5s that you can get there into. One of them, not so much. It's a little bit longer and it kind of tails off left at the end. Really hard to get to. But if you can score on those other 2 par 5s, maybe get some eagle chances there, that'll really help you out. And then scoring-wise, like birdie or better, bogey avoidance, it correlated a little bit less this week, but you always kind of want to look at those. I would especially look at bogey avoidance when the wind gets bad here, just to find some of those guys that are grinders and will keep, like, if it the winning score here is like 9 under, which it can be, then bogey avoidance will be huge, especially if the wind's in play here. The field is 132 golfers this time around. It is one of 5 tour events that has invitational status, so you will have a little bit smaller field than the 156 you would normally see. There still is some pretty big names, more so than there is at this place in years past. There's a lot. There's 40 guys I counted that are coming from Augusta, and some big headliners, including like Dustin Johnson, Molinari, Schauffele, DeChambeau, Kuchar, Cantlay, Spieth, Webb, Fleetwood, and a bunch of other guys. So the field is actually pretty good this year. So, you know, it's a nice little rebound from the Masters. All of us are coming down from that high, so it should be pretty entertaining still. My strategy this week, I've seen a lot of this talk on Twitter where there's the Masters hangover. You know, are guys really motivated coming from the Masters? You know, do they want to win here? So I could see a lot of people fading these top guys, saying, you know, they're only here for sponsorships. And then when I looked at the top guys, the big dogs here that I'm going to list off a little later on from my picks, is there's 10 guys in this range. Fleetwood is the lowest at 92, and Dustin Johnson is the highest at 11.6 on DraftKings. And I was really getting nitpicky with it, like trying to figure out who's going to be good here, like who's going to be decent, who you should probably fade in this category. And it was really tough because I could see all of these guys. You could make a case for any one of them, more so than most weeks with this category. So then I thought, you know, if people are going to be fading a little bit on this top category, and if it's the ownership spread out even because all these guys are pretty good picks, then it might be a good spot to go contrarian and find value in this top tier, because there isn't going to be a lot of ownership up here. So I like this, kind of like the Stars and Scrubs approach for this tournament, and especially because there's only 132 golfers in this field, so there's going to be a higher percentage of guys make the cut. So you can get a little cuter with some of these picks, you know, get a guy that barely makes the cut and then he shoots really well on the weekend, you know, where he would have missed the cut had there been more guys in this tournament, something like that. And my guess is that from 8,000 to 9,000, and a little bit below 8,000, there's a couple guys that I see this with, but 8,000 to 9,000 from Leishman to Siwoo Kim, I see the highest amount of ownership where people are trying to make balanced lineups. And I bet a lot of people are going to try and squeeze two, three, or four of these guys into a lineup just so they can have a lot of win equity within those guys. So if that's what everybody's doing and they're fading the top, and the top guys don't go too highly owned in any one spot of those top guys, then I might go Stars and Scrubs this week. But even if you do want to dabble in the high ownership range of 8,000 to 9,000, that's fine too. But the good strategy to run with that is just in your other slots. You pick somebody down at 6,700 or, you know, 7,200 that nobody's really picking, just so you can make sure you get a unique lineup. But now I'm going to move on to the picks. For the big dog category, we're going to look at guys, like I said, that are 9,200 and up on DraftKings. My first cash play is going to be Dustin Johnson. And he just seems like the kind of guy that's going to bag groceries, or he's going to juggle dynamite, or he's going to defuse a bomb with the same intensity. Like this guy, he doesn't get excited for anything. He doesn't get down for anything. So I think coming from the Masters to the Heritage, finishing second, and he's here on a, because RBC is a sponsor of his, it's not going to affect him. He's not going to come here and go, I'm just here for a vacation and just take the week off. I feel like he's just going to come here and play golf. He's a freaking robot. He's going to do what he does. He's finished outside of the top 10 once in his last seven rounds. So I think even though people are going to go lighter on this category, I could see a lot of people just starting with DJ as their first pick and then working from there when they're building their lineups. So I like him as a cash play, and then GPP, I'm not crazy about him so much, but it all kind of depends on where his ownership goes. The next guy in my cash picks is Patrick Cantlay. He's coming off a ninth place finish at the Masters. A lot of people saw him, you know, take the outright lead at the 15th hole on Sunday. So I think he's going to be a popular name. His only two appearances here, he was third in 2017, and he was seventh last year. You know, his tee to green game is great. He's the best par four scorer on the tour right now. 11 of these 18 holes are par fours, you know, so I think he's going to be highly owned guy, but he just looks like he's got a crazy high ceiling, and he could win this thing. So I really like him for a cash play. And then my last cash play for this week is Jim Furyk at 9,400. He won here in a playoff over Kevin Kisner, and he shot 18 under, which is might be the second lowest score at a tournament here. And the year before that, he did finish seventh. The last 2 years, he's played here too, and he finished right around 70, I want to say. So not as good, but he's a different player this year than he was the last 2 years. And, you know, the big knock on his game, obviously, is his driving distance. But at this place, it matters less. So that just elevates the rest of his game. So he's going to have a huge leg up on the rest of this playing field. So I really like Furyk here, especially for this price. Now for my GPP plays from the big dog category. First one, and I really like this one right now, is Molinari at 11,300. I think a lot of people are still going to have that meltdown in the back of their minds where he went in the water twice at the end of the Masters, and they're thinking maybe, you know, something's just wrong with him and he's not going to have the confidence going forward, or he's just going to have a little rough patch to get out of. And especially at 11,300, I feel like people like taking Molinari when he's like the 10th most expensive or the 15th most expensive guy, but they don't want to take him when he's the second most expensive guy. So I feel like that and his course history, which he's played here the last 3 years, and he's finished 45th, 22nd, and 49th. You put all those together, and I think you're going to get low ownership, but this is kind of a course that would suit his game, where it's just hit your spots and then just grind out pars and get some birdies when you need to. That's, he loves doing that. So I feel like this could be a week where Francesco is going to get some redemption off of his loss last week, and then possibly get a win here. My second GPP play is Webb Simpson. He's got great course history here. He was 11th in fifth place his last 2 years, I want to say here. I'm going to have to check. I want to make sure I'm not lying to you. And then he was fifth last week at the Masters as well. Where is he at? Webb Simpson. Yeah, he's fifth. Yep, last 2 years, fifth and 11th. He was fifth at the Masters. So all things would kind of point to like, oh, Webb's going to be a real chalky kind of player this week. His game certainly suits this course. He's 11th in strokes gained around the green, 7th in scrambling, 7th in par 4 scoring, 6th in bogey avoidance. But he's right above Fleetwood, right above Kisner, right above Siwoo Kim, and he's just above that 9,000 to 8,000 range that I think is going to be pretty highly owned. So I could see Webb kind of getting a little bit of lower ownership than what he should here in this spot for a guy that could easily win this tournament. So I kind of like Webb as a GPP play, kind of a sneaky GPP play. And then my last one for this category is strictly for FanDuel, not so much for DraftKings, is Tommy Fleetwood. He's the 10th most expensive guy on DraftKings, but sixth most expensive on FanDuel, which is, you know, not a lot of a difference there. But when you're talking about this top tier of guys, any bit of difference makes a lot of difference in ownership. So Fleetwood for FanDuel would be a great GPP play. A cash play, I could see him that in DraftKings. Or, I mean, if he doesn't go, he hasn't played here before, so I could see him kind of not being that high in DraftKings. So it could go either way, depending on his ownership. But there is some first-time guys that do win here, so I think he will still be picked quite a lot. And people just love picking Tommy Fleetwood. But he's one of the best in the game at tee to green, fifth in scrambling this year. So, you know, even if he hasn't played here, once he gets through a couple practice rounds and just kind of knows how this course plays and where he's going to have to hit to, he's so good tee to green and scrambling that he's probably going to be highly owned, but maybe not so much in FanDuel, which is where I like him as a GPP play. For my value plays, I'm going to be looking at guys from 7,400 to 9,100 on DraftKings. My first cash play out of that category is going to be Ian Poulter at 8,600. He seems to just keep getting disrespected with his price tag because he's $600 below Kevin Kisner right now. And although Kisner has good course history, they both finished 7th last year and 11th the year before here, and they're both playing real well lately. And in my eyes, Ian Poulter is just the better golfer. So for Kevin Kisner to be $600 more is kind of mind-blowing. But Ian Poulter's, you know, kind of at this discounted price, and he's right in this range where there's going to be a lot of ownership. So I see a lot of people picking him this week. But for cash games, he is absolutely a great pick. GPP, I think he might be, you know, one of the most highly owned guys this week. So unless you feel really good about him, I might think about fading him this week. My next cash play, Ryan Moore at 8,100. He's a great fit for this course. He's only played here once in the last 5 years, which was last year, and he finished 16th. So obviously he seems to like this course. And lately he's actually kind of turned his game around. He had kind of a rocky start to this season, but 4 out of his last 5 events, he's finished 33rd or better. And 2 weeks ago at the Valero, his last event, he finished 3rd. The biggest weakness for him is his length off the tee. He averages 285 yards. You know, Jim Furyk's 279. He fits right into that kind of mold. But this is a course where accuracy reigns supreme. So I love Ryan Moore in this spot at 8,100, but mostly for cash games because he is going to be probably highly owned. Another guy that's going to get a lot of ownership is Lucas Glover, 7,800. He's my last cash play out of this group. He should be pretty comfortable at this course. Great tee to green, and especially around the green. He's the best scrambler on tour this year. He's also real good at avoiding bogeys. So if it gets windy like it's supposed to, you know, he's the 4th best par 4 scorer this year, good at avoiding bogeys. He's made 4 straight cuts here and hasn't finished worse than 33rd. So he should be a very safe pick here. And at 7,800, he probably will be picked quite a bit. So another, you know, cash play unless you feel real good about him in GPPs. For my GPP picks, first one I'm looking at is kind of in this range, so it's a little bit of a shocker to some, maybe. Charles Howell III at 8,700. Coke Rack is right above him. I like Coke Rack here. You know, Poulter's right there underneath him. And then there's this whole list of guys beneath him, like Ben An, I like. Sung J.M., I like. You know, Ryan Moore, Leishman are all down there. These are all guys that you can play. But I think with all these choices here, Charles Howell might get kind of overlooked this week. He's made 4 of his last 5 cuts, but he's on this course, but he's only finished better than 53rd once. And then his last 2 events have been a 35th place finish and a 32nd place finish. I think that was at the Players and the Masters, so obviously those are going to be 2 tough events. But I think with all that kind of like mediocre finishes hanging in the air, he's going to look like a good cash play to people where they're like, oh yeah, he's going to make the cut. He's going to, you know, get inside the top 20 maybe, but he's not going to have a chance to win this. So I think cash plays, he's going to be pretty popular. But then GPP, that people don't think he's going to finish in the top 10, so they might not pick him as much. So if his ownership's down, and I think he's a great fit for this course, and if people aren't going to pick him, then I'll pick him GPP just to go kind of contrarian. My next GPP play in this category is, I dipped a little bit lower now, so I'm trying to get out of that range that's going to be a little bit more higher owned, and I'm going with Abraham Answer at 7,600. He's 149th in strokes gained around the green, which is a terrible sign here because these greens are so small, you're going to need to have good touch around the green. So I think when people see that right away, it might turn them off. But he's 29th in scrambling. The big place, I kind of dug deeper on this, the big place where he loses his strokes around the green in scrambling is from the sand. But he's 20th in strokes gained off the tee. He's in the top 20 in strokes gained off the tee, driving accuracy, proximity, par 4 scoring. So with the good accuracy off the tee, the good accuracy into the green, if he can kind of avoid the sand this week, or if he does hit the sand, if he just has a good week in the sand And a lot of people are going the other way because they see those bad strokes gained around the green numbers, then I'll be all for it. But people do like picking Answer in these weaker fields for whatever reason. He's just one of those names where it's like an off-brand Tony Finau. Like, no matter where Tony Finau's priced, they think he's got this huge top 10 equity, so they're going to pick him anyways. Abraham's kind of that same way, so I would be careful with that, but I think he could be, you know, a sneaky good pick this week. Another guy that probably has a little bit more risk baked into him that is my last GPP play in this category is Adam Hadwin. This year, he hasn't been all that great with his irons and his wedges. Strokes gained around the green, he's 194th on tour this year. But last year, he was 25th in strokes gained around the green. So I feel like any one of these weeks, he could surprise people and just kind of turn that game around, whether he just gets kind of lucky and it kicks back in, or if he's really been working on it, he can get back to that point where he was. And another big thing is that he's priced next to Grillo. He's underneath Graham McDowell, Zach Johnson, Snedeker, all guys with big name equity that I think are going to soak up some of that ownership in that price range. So he could kind of, just how shaky he's been this year, he could fly under the radar. And if he all of a sudden just turns it back on and gets that short game rocking again, then he could be a very good pick here and surprise people. But that would be it for the value category. Next is the sleepers at 7,300 and under. The first one I look at, he's kind of a mix between cash and GPP for me this week. But I did put him in the cash category just because of two things. This event last year, he finished 7th. And his last tournament was the Valero Texas Open, where he finished 6th. So he's got those two big things working for him this week that I think people will kind of see that and maybe pick him a little more heavy than they would in weeks past. But the Texas Open before that, where he finished 6th, he was 4 out of 5 cuts he missed. So I think that is going to still keep his ownership low. That's kind of why he's this hybrid cash GPP play for me right now. But he's one of the most accurate on tour off of the tee. And his game, he doesn't have any huge holes in his game outside of that. So he's pretty well-rounded. So there's nothing you really got to worry about too much. But if he's just in this spot where, you know, he just started to play well, and this is a course that fits his eye, then he could be a really good pick here at 7,200. And that was Kevin Streelman. My second cash pick is Jonathan Bird. He's at 6,800. I feel like a lot of people could be on him because he is like, he's that Jim Furyk build where he's, you know, he's only hitting the ball like 275 or something. But he's the second best in scrambling this year. He's actually tied with Patrick Cantlay in par 4 scoring as the best on tour. He's 200th in driving distance, but obviously at Harbortown, that's not going to make that much of a difference, especially if you're accurate and you're really good with your irons. And Bird is 10th in bogey avoidance, and he's played here 3 times in the last 5 years. No real great finishes, but just kind of having that experience in the way he's kind of starting to blossom a little bit, it looks like, especially with his iron play and just his touch game. I feel like Bird could be a good pick, but maybe garner some ownership at 6,800. But my last pick for the cash category is Scott Piercy, which is crazy for me to see him at 6,700, a guy that's this good, that's been playing like pretty good this year and has wins on tour. He's at 6,700. He played here once in the last 5 years, which was last year, and he finished 16th. He seems like stat-wise, he's a good fit for this course, and he's played 13 events this season. 8 of those 13, he's finished 33rd or better, and 4 of those were top 10s. He's 20th in driving accuracy, or he's in the top 20 in driving accuracy, top 20 in green and regulation. So this is a guy that can just put it in spots and then get to the green. So he should have a lot of attempts at birdie here, at par here, maybe crack the top 20 again for 6,700 and a guy that's this big a name that can win. It seems like a no-brainer to me to pick this guy, especially for a cash play. I don't know if he's going to get, you know, a lot of ownership down here. He might end up, but he could be a good GPP play too. Now for my GPP plays from the sleeper category. The first one up is Corey Connors. I don't know how he's missed so many cuts before that win at the Valero Texas Open, but he is so good at ball striking. He's 12th in strokes gained off the tee, 8th in strokes gained approaching the green, 4th in green in regulation, 2nd in proximity. But the big holes in his game are his putting, which has been bad. And when he does miss the green in regulation, he just doesn't up and down all that much. So, you know, the way his game has been clicking, it kind of gives you hope. But when you look at his course history, he played here in 2018 last year, missed the cut by 3 strokes. He played here in 2015, missed the cut by 4 strokes. And those are the only 2 times I think he's played here. That and the fact that he's been so shaky might kind of steer people away, especially at 73. He's a little bit higher than what he's been in the past, 7,300. So I think that might keep his ownership down. But he's such an elite ball striker that if he just still has confidence coming off of that win, and I can't remember what he finished at the Masters. I think it was like 56 or something. It wasn't great, but it's like he made the cut. So that's got to get the juices flowing at least. So I could see him being a good, like, semi-low ownership play with a lot of upside. These next two guys kind of fit in that same mold of just your classic GPP guys where they might get a little bit of ownership down here, but they have the potential to top five here, no doubt. Next one's Ryan Palmer at 7,000. The worst parts of his game, scrambling, 176 this year. Strokes gained around the green, 162nd. So those two stats alone are huge here. So people looking to make picks, if they see that, you know, the name Ryan Palmer is going to perk some interest. But if people just see that, they'll go, no, that's not a fit for this course, I'm not going to play him. So that might keep his ownership a little bit low. He's missed 2 straight cuts too. And then 2 of his last 3 finishes here were 71st in 2016 and 76th in 2018, where he made both those cuts but finished poorly. He did finish 11th here in 2017 in between those two, and he finished 4th at the Honda Classic 3 events ago, so which is just before those last 2 miscuts he had. So he seems like, just like Connor, where it's like, you're not exactly sure what you're going to get, but it seems like he's either going to be right around that cut line, about to miss the cut, or he's in the top 10, and there's like no in between there. So these are two guys that, you know, I'm not going to load up on either one of them, but if you just play them a little bit, you might have as much or more, you know, ownership to leverage against the field, and you have a guy that can top 10 at, you know, right around 7,000. My last GPP play, which I think could be kind of my sneaky best GPP play from this category, is Ches Reavie. I haven't really heard anybody talking about him. He's at 6,800. He's just like these other two guys where around the green, he's 182nd, scrambling, he's 156th, but he's a good ball striker. He's 2nd in driving accuracy, 23rd green in regulation, 23rd strokes gained approaching the green, and 13th in proximity. So if he just finds more greens than everybody else, he's going to have more scoring opportunities. Or if he just has a slightly better game around the green than he typically does, then he's really going to surprise people. And last year he was 27th in scrambling. So it's like that Adam Hadwin thing where if you look at years past, he's been better in these categories and he can rebound. It's just, you know, when is he going to rebound? So I kind of like Ches Reavie in the spot, especially because he's just going to have a good precision game off of the tee and into these greens. So he's going to keep himself in it no matter what his short game does. Especially at 6,800, you can't really ask too much out of that. And now for my dark horses, the last category. And all these guys happen to be 6,500 or lower on DraftKings. Crazy thing is I feel as good about these guys as I do about my sleeper category, which was just above this that I mentioned. And those guys are flirting with the 7,000s. So that's kind of why I like the Stars and Scrubs approach this week. I feel like if you're dipping into the low 7,000s, you might as well just dip into the to the 6,000s because there is some value down here. And then that will open up the rest of your lineup to spend on some bigger guys. But my first guy from the dark horses is Michael Thompson. We haven't really heard of this guy in a while, but, you know, a month and a half ago, this guy was, you know, priced around 8,000 plus. So he was at the Arnold Palmer. He finished 71st. And then the next two events, he was 70th and 71st from there. Two of those were missed cuts, I believe. And then we haven't seen him since then. But before that, he was 13th, he was 10th, he was 7th, and he was 16th in his prior four events. So I feel like people aren't talking about him. He's got a crazy low price tag, and he's still, you know, he rates out really well, and he wasn't brutally missing cuts in that Florida swing, which is going to be a tough kind of fluky course to play on any one of those Florida courses. So I don't really weight those too hard. So I feel like he's kind of getting disrespected here by people not talking about him, especially at this lower price tag. So I kind of like him. He's played this event three times in the last 5 years, and he's improved each of those three times. I think he played in like 2014 or 15, and then maybe the last 2 years. And then he finished right around 40th last year. So he's gotten better each time, and he did have a huge stretch where he was playing great this year, and then he hit a little bump in the road recently. But I think, you know, nobody's talking about him. He could be a great play at 6,500. The next guy is my guy for this week. I always have a guy in the dark horses. This is my dude right here, DJ. Don't even know how to pronounce his last name. Trahan, something like that. 6,300, and when you look at his strokes gain statistics, all of his other statistics, it's insane why he's down here this low. But he's 53rd or better in every strokes gain stat besides putting, and his putting I don't even think is like that bad. It's not even, you know, it's right around like 80 or something, so it's not like he's dead last in the field in putting. But, you know, his green and regulation, scrambling, birdie or better, bogey avoidance, par 4 scoring, par 5 scoring are all 26th or better. So why he's at this price, I don't really know. But I feel like I've heard some buzz about him in recent weeks. So even at this low of a price tag, we could see him flirt with like 10, 15% almost. I'm not a big ownership guy, and my projections probably wouldn't be that accurate. But I could see him being way too high ownership for his price tag, but I still like him down here, and who knows, maybe I'm wrong with his ownership percentage. But the only thing that really scares me for him is that his best finishes, which is where he probably gets some of these elevated strokes gain stats, are, you know, Punta Cana, Puerto Rico Open, I think Sanderson Farms and Shriners are his best finishes this year. And those are probably four of the weakest fields that you would see. So they're basically web.com events. So maybe that kind of has him a little inflated. But I think when you look at the rest of his stats, they are still solid, where they would translate to a better field if he was playing in better fields and finishing better. So I think I put money on him to win, which is kind of a long shot, but 150 to 1, I think he should be closer to 100 to 1. So I really like his value here. Kind of a question mark with that. Can he finish in a stronger event? But my next dark horse is a guy we haven't really heard too much from lately, but Harold Varner III. He had a great start to this season, but kind of cooled off. He's played here the last 3 years. His best finish is 59th. So I think people, you know, looking at his recent form, you know, his kind of longer recent form in his course history, will just go, you know, not that great. But in my model with the stats that correlate high with this course, he actually fits pretty well this year to Harbortown Golf Links. So I like him in this spot. He is coming off of a 23rd place finish at the Valero Texas Open, so maybe he's feeling a little bit better, getting right back to where he was early in the season. And at 6,300, I think he's at least worth a look down here. My last guy, and he was kind of a late add, but I put money on him to win as well because I'm psychotic. He's 151, but Scott Brown at 6,200. He's played here each of the last 5 years, so this is a course that he really knows well, but he has gotten worse every single year since 2004. He finished fifth in 2004, so, you know, there is some kind of potential here, but he is coming off of a seventh place finish, even better than Harold Varner III, a seventh place finish at the Valero. And then in his eight events before that, he does have two other top 10s and a top 20, I believe. So looking at his stats, how they line up with this course, they also kind of line up well, especially compared to where he was last year. So I think he's definitely going to have a better, obviously he should have a better finish than last year. I think he was close to dead last in the field, but I think Scott Brown at 6,200 is a guy that you can think to put a flyer on if you want to go stars and scrubs. Those are it for all of my picks this week. Next, I will kind of slide into some betting advice and go over, you know, just some tips to make some live bets and stuff. But just to kind of recap first, the dark horses I feel more confident about, which was my last category I went over, than I usually do. And the sleepers I don't feel all that crazy about. I feel like there's a good amount of value between, Brant Snedeker all the way up to the top of the leaderboard. But a lot of the ownership is going to go from Brant Snedeker at, I think, like 7,500 to, you know, Fleetwood at 9,200 is where most of the ownership is going to lie. So I think just to go outside of that, I feel real good about the guys way down on the price board there. So I'm going to go stars and scrub. You can go any which way you want and take whoever's advice and go with your gut. Doesn't really matter. But I'm going to load up on probably the top dogs and then some of the dark horses because I feel real good about those guys this week. But looking back at previous year's winners, Satoshi Kodara won it here last year at 12 under. The year before was Wesley Bryan at 13 under. 2016 was Brendan Grace at 9 under. 2015 was Jim Furyk in a playoff at 18 under. And then 2014 was Kuchar at 11 under. So, you know, Furyk, if the conditions are fantastic, you can get close to 20 under. But most of the time, it's, you know, low teens under par wins it. Especially, I think this year, we're going to see some high winds. So it's going to be low. It's going to be kind of a grind. And there's going to be a lot of guys shooting up, you know, the last two, three rounds that just kind of come out of nowhere and surprise you. So there's a lot of live betting value to be had this week. So it's going to be kind of fun and interesting to see, you know, where the chips fall this week. You can see guys shoot, 63s, 64s. When Kodara won it last year, he shot 63 in the second round, which is 8 under, and then 66 in the last round. You know, you'll see guys shoot, I think it was, who was it, Kuchar or Grace? Maybe Wesley Bryan. Somebody just shot consistently under 70 each day. But a lot of the times you'll see guys just a couple rounds, they'll throw together 6 under, 7 under. And that really will just carry them to a win here if they can just grind it out. So the big thing to do is look for in the last 2 days some guys in spots where they could jump up and, you know, capture the leaderboard. But it all depends on who's up there. You know, you got, it's a little bit more of a loaded field talent wise this year. So if you got like a Dustin Johnson or Bryson DeChambeau with a sizable lead going into this later days, it might be a little bit tougher to catch that talent there, but there still is, especially in rough conditions, there still is some spots where you could, you know, put some money on a decent flyer and end up winning it. Like Kadari shot 66 on the last day. You know, Wesley Bryant shot, he was the one that shot under 70 each day and then won it. Brendan Grace shot 66 in the first and the fourth round to win it. Shot 74 in the second round. So there's guys just moving all over the place here. So I would just look for guys that seem to feel comfortable here, are within striking distance, and, you know, not too far behind a talented guy or a group of talented guys that could run away with this. Those are pretty much the betting tips this week. It's a little bit more open than it was for the Masters. The Masters was more of a, you know, you bet the guy in the lead or within a stroke or two in the last 2 days, because they can, you know, the way the talent shapes out there, they can run away with it, and they most likely will, unless you get lucky and Molinari puts two in the drink on the back nine. But those are my value plays. I don't think it's been 2 weeks now since I've only just posted one article. I usually post two. I forgot last week. I might forget again tomorrow, but the next article, well, the first article is obviously a lot of the stuff that I went over, minus the betting advice is only stuff that I put in the podcast and in the next article. So if I get to the next article, it will be tomorrow. It will be, you know, top 10s, top 20s to make the cut, to win, everybody's percentages, and then where, you know, the betting numbers are kind of looking the best based on a value and, you know, based off of what my simulation gives me, which this week I see a lot of value within ranges that I haven't seen in weeks past. Like to top 10 and top 20 hasn't been very favorable, but now this week it is, because you look at Mark Leishman, who's one of the better golfers in this field, to top 20, he's plus 200. Like, I'm half thinking of throwing just $20 on it just to double up, because Mark Leishman in this field, you know, even if the conditions get kind of hairy and weird stuff happens, he should be about even to top 20, or, you know, plus 150 at most. So plus 200 is disrespectful. I know his course history isn't great, but there is just a lot of value plays, and you'll pick that up in my article. You know, Tommy Fleetwood, they give no respect to top 10. He's plus 250 to top 10, and that would mean the percent that they give him to get in top 10 would be, where is he at, 28.5%. My simulation gives him about 40% to top 10, especially in this field. He's one of the best golfers here. You know, he's almost 50-50 to top 10. So plus 250 for Fleetwood. And they're going off of, he hasn't played here before, so that's, he's kind of at a disadvantage. But they have had guys that play here for the first time and win, so I'm not all that concerned about it. You know, Kuchar, Leishman, Xander are all good top 10 bets here I'm looking at right now. But I think just because the value is actually here this week, I will definitely post the article tomorrow so that you can see some of these numbers and wade through them and see just kind of the bets that you like to. That would be it for this podcast, I do believe. I will see you all next week. Good luck, everybody. This should be, even though it's not the Masters, it should be a pretty fun one to get back into and get off of that, you know, get off of that low that we just hit after the Tiger Woods win. So good luck, everybody. Shoot them straight.